You and I back together again, chatting on a Tuesday, August 22nd, 2023 edition of Connecticut Today. We welcomed Republican State Senator Eric Berthel on a public hearing regarding the proposed elimination of gasoline-powered vehicle sales in Connecticut by the year 2035. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio also chimed in on the same subject in her weekly spot. And University of New Haven Associate Professor Dr. Bradley Woodworth provided us with an update on the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And from what I understand, speaking of opinions, there is no shortage of such going on today. There is it's not an in-person hearing, what a surprise. There's a virtual hearing going on, a lot of folks for and against this suggestion, law, maybe law, mandate, whatever it is, to eliminate all sales of new gasoline-powered vehicles in the state by the 2035 model year, which is only, with the new models coming out in a couple of weeks, only 11 model years away, 10 or 11. But to start that phase out in about 4 years or so. Joining us right now, one of our regulars, Republican State Senator Eric Berthel, District 32. Eric representing all or parts of Woodbury, Middlebury, Southbury, Oxford, Seymour, Roxbury, and the like. Eric, it's Paul again, sir. How are you? Good to talk to you.
Hey, Paul, always a pleasure. Thank you for having me on. I hope you have had a great summer thus far.
Yeah, so far. Absolutely. So, Eric, what's the deal now? Now, I haven't been able to log in. I've been jammed here, but I'm hearing from people that some of the opinions here are hot and heavy against this thing. Explain to my listeners what exactly is going on here.
Well, I'm happy to do that, and thank you for the opportunity again to come on with you this afternoon. Paul, I think before we dive right into the policy that's at play here, I think we have to dive into the process that has not been followed. I think it's inappropriate and incorrect for the governor to issue a mandate on a policy this large and entirely encompassing regarding how we will drive in Connecticut in 2035 and what we will be driving without having the legislature be a part of that discussion. Legislators are, by every measure, the voice of the people. That's what we are elected to do. That's what the legislative branch does. For the governor to go and issue this mandate, this policy, and just say it's going to happen, and then decide to have this completely not in-person hearing today, and then to kind of start to vacillate a little bit on, yeah, I guess we should get the legislature involved. It's just not the way we should be doing things in Connecticut. The governor should not be in a vacuum on something this critical and this big. You know, Paul, part of this reeks of Connecticut once again trying to follow that primrose path of California, mm-hmm. which you and I know we're paying attention to what's going on the West Coast. California is a disaster right now with a lot of other really bad policies they've implemented. So I think we need to hit the brakes, no pun intended. We need to allow it to get before the legislature. Let's have public hearings, multiple committees of cognizance that will need to chime in on this. Let's bring it forward, discussion, and have it go through the process the right way. So that's the first part of what's a little disturbing about what's going on with this. But the second thing is the governor's mandate would eliminate the sale of any internal combustion engine-powered car by 2035, which, as you said, is only 11 model years from now. It would require anyone who wanted to buy a new car to buy an electric-only vehicle. And there are dozens and dozens of problems wrought with that. Hearing today in this public hearing from Eversource, telling Pura they would need $2.4 billion, $2.4 billion to build 14 new substations and to upgrade 8 existing substations. And they assured, more or less, that this would result in higher rates
Eric, I'm just shocked. Imagine that we have a major utility, Eric, telling us, wait a minute, we don't have the power capacity. I'm just stunned.
Yeah, Paul, and you know, the other piece with this is, and I don't want to take a shot at Eversource or United Illuminating. Look, their job is to keep our houses lit, and you know, for all intents and purposes, I think generally they do a good job, but we have seen in the course of the last 5, 6, 8 years, 10 years, that this electric grid in Connecticut is also very fragile. You know, we've had some storms come through. We all remember the really big storm that opened everyone's eyes up to how fragile the grid is when we had the snow on Halloween a decade ago. But the other piece that's most disturbing is we had, very quietly, kind of went under the radar of the national news, we had a few days during this hottest summer ever on our great blue marble, this great planet Earth, hottest summer ever, where the electric grid nationally was at its maximum capacity to produce power. Maximum capacity. They actually issue alerts and warnings on that. So all of a sudden now we're going to switch to requiring people to use more electricity. And by the way, how is it generated? Is it all wind and solar? I guess not, because in California, there are pictures of charging stations where they're powering those stations with diesel generators. Where is this helping the environment? Tell me. Honestly, right? It's laughable, Paul. It's absolutely laughable.
I know. GOP State Senator Eric Berthel is the guest. District 32, Greater Woodbury, Southbury, Bethlehem, Roxbury, that area. Talking about what's going on today, a virtual, not in person, but a virtual hearing about a lot of folks for and against the notion here that we will eventually phase out the sale of internal combustion engine vehicles here in the state. And Eric, look, I have said numerous times when discussing this, I'm a techie, I'm a nerd, I think the EV technology is great, but this is like turning a battleship. I mean, Eric, just the way when you buy a house now, there's energy efficient appliances, more and more people you see buying EVs and hybrids. You know, the American consumer will eventually want this, Eric, and I would say that 30, 40, 50, 60 years down the road, we'll probably be close to all electric vehicles, if not there. But as you say, the notion that we're going to do this without a corresponding plan to say, hey, where's all this power coming from, to me is just ludicrous.
Right. Yeah, Paul, I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, part of that plan, as I started with when we opened up a few minutes ago, is that you need to have the voice of the people heard, and we're not allowing that. You know, electronic Zoom hearings are one thing, but we heard loud and clear after we came out of COVID and our beautiful Capitol building and legislative office building were open to the public. They wanted to be there. And, you know, I want to give a quick shout out to my minority leader, to Senator Kevin Kelly, who's a regular guest on your show from Stratford. He has truly been a leader on this issue since the governor made this announcement. He challenged the governor's office. He challenged the Secretary of State to make this public hearing open in person, open up that beautiful building, let people come in. There's not a lot going on. It's the middle of the summer. And the response was that essentially they were not going to do that. And this meeting is taking place by Zoom only. So if you don't have a computer, if you don't have a phone, and there are plenty of our constituents that don't, maybe the elderly are not as tech savvy as some of the younger folks, they can't testify on this. And to your point, without a plan, without understanding what the demand is going to be on our public utilities or on our electric utilities, without knowing if they can handle that capacity, what's it going to cost? What do these cars cost? Do the federal subsidies that come with buying an electric car today, do they continue to exist? And dare I say, Paul, dare I say, because I am a fiscal conservative in this body, in this legislative body, right now, when I get in my car and I drive it down the highway, I'm paying road taxes on the gasoline that I buy to power that car. Are we going to tax? I don't want to add any taxes. I'd like to take them all away if we could. But are we going to tax electric cars? And how do we do that? How do they pay their fair share of using our roads when we've talked about toll booths and mileage taxes? And we already have one of the most progressive gasoline, state gasoline tax in the country. Yep. There's a lot of thought that has to go into this before our governor can just go and issue a mandate and say, 2035, come hell or high water, here we go. We're only going to be able to buy electric cars. It's short-sighted, and it's not the right way to do it.
I had to laugh, Eric. There was a story a couple of weeks ago where Governor Greg Abbott in Texas passed a bill, and he got a bill passed in his legislature that said, fine, if you drive an electric car, God bless you, that's what you want to do, but you owe the state of Texas, I think it's $200 or $250 a year Eric, for that exact thing. And all these EV owners were saying, well, I think $30 or $40 is fair. Really? When you're not paying any fuel taxes back to the state? I mean, some of this is laughable, Eric, and it's only going to get worse here in the state as the years go on, because that gasoline tax, and I know you hear from people who testify with you in Hartford, they're already sounding the alarms on the dwindling revenues, correct?
That's right. That's absolutely right. And when we saw that the price of gasoline go down so low, almost 3 years ago, right, under a different presidential administration, mm-hmm. gas was cheap. And we actually saw the wholesale, I think it's motor fuels taxes. I may have that a little backwards, but we saw the revenue generated by that diminish substantially. And that was when all of my colleagues on the left were all, hot and bothered about having to put toll booths on all our roads. Remember, at one point, Paul, we were talking about 82 collection locations on our highways. I mean, we just have this insatiable appetite to tax people in this state, and we need to keep fighting against it, is what it comes down to.
All
right. It really is.
Eric, thanks. Appreciate it. Eric Berthel, Republican State Senate member, District 32, areas including Watertown, Bethlehem, Washington, Roxbury, Bridgewater, Southbury, and all that. Eric, good to speak with you. We'll chat down the road, my friend.
Thanks,
Thank
Paul.
You. Appreciate it.
Take
good to
care.
Hear from you. Thanks. Yep, Eric Berthel there. All right. And folks, listen, I said this all the time. We're going to eventually have most, if not all, the vehicles on the roads, on the highways, on the back roads. Yeah, they're probably going to be all electric eventually. But again, what did Eric just say? Some of the people testifying on this virtual hearing today was one of the power companies. I think he said it was Eversource. Eversource said, okay, if you're going to do this, we need numerous new power generation facilities. Where are you going to build those? And listen, it's their right. I understand it. But, what would happen tomorrow? If in a few minutes, in 13 minutes at 4 o'clock, what would happen if some city or town said, hey, we just signed this great agreement with Eversource. They're a great neighbor. They're going to build a power generating plant right here. Oh, my God. Now, people have the right to oppose that. I understand that. How many years are we talking about litigation, tying that up with environmental studies and animal studies? This is just, it's amazing. Let's just let the markets dictate. That's all. Eventually, the EVs will be all over the place. And like I said, once you get an EV, you know what the biggest problem with EVs now? They're still too damn expensive. Now, that's because they're still relatively new. It's like, you remember when VCRs came out, the first Betamax units and the first VHS units? You remember how stinking expensive those things were? $700-$800. Oh, my God. I go online now because I still have a bunch of tapes and people are buying you. You can get a used VCR for $50. $40. There's some people, believe it or not, that I think there may be one or two companies that still make them, because there's about 80 gazillion people with tapes out there that are still watchable. But remember when VCRs came out, camcorders came out, and within 2 or 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, oh, look, I paid $800 for that VCR camcorder combination. It's $150 now on eBay. Our usual Tuesday 507 spotlight. Megan Portfolio from the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. She writes the Hartford Portfolio column, and she, like one of our previous guests, was watching what was going on today, at least in cyberspace, over a rather controversial proposition, law, goal, target. Megan, good to have you with us. I'm not even sure what this thing is, this phase out of gasoline-powered vehicles. It's still all a little nebulous to me.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Oh, so, I'll give you a brief little history.
Okay.
Back in 2004, our lawmakers decided to pass a bill that basically handcuffed us to California's emission standards.
Mm-hmm.
In the U.S., we have two options, the EPA option or California option. California is a lot stricter than the federal. So Connecticut decided back in 2004 we were going to go that route.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. They didn't. I don't think they realized that this would eventually end up being like a ban on gas cars.
Yeah.
So fast forward till today, regulations, couple regulations were put in, and there's a public hearing today, which would essentially ban the sale of new cars by 2035.
Gasoline-powered vehicles, yeah. So everything would have to be an EV or a hybrid. The thing that, well, many things are making me kind of itch about this, Megan. Number one, the fact that, and our previous guest, Eric Berthel, State Senate Republican, said it on the show here. It's kind of, well, maybe it's not odd. It's kind of, depressing and disappointing that this wasn't done in person. Like, why would you not? Well, I guess that's a rhetorical question. Why would you not have this thing done in person on a nice day long after COVID at the state capitol?
Well, not only that, Paul, they're doing this right in the middle of the summer. Busiest, time of the year for travelers. School's about to start, so parents are, getting their kids ready for school. No one's paying attention. There was like a press release from the governor, and they did post it on the e-regulation page, which only nerds like me actually even know how to get to. So it's been like, it's just been shady. That's my technical term for it. It's been super shady, this whole process. And so Yankee Institute got the word out. I know Republican Kevin Kelly, he was letting people know about it. So there was a public hearing today. It wasn't a hearing to decide whether or not to do it. It was just for people to weigh in. And what I found most interesting and actually really exciting was people that are for this ban of new cars. They were all special interest groups. Some of them even like will profit off of it, like Tesla. But the people that were opposed were just like regular citizens that had legit questions. What do we do about infrastructure? What do we do about the cost? Like, there's just so many questions. It's like, okay, we have to buy this, but like, what's the plan, guys?
Yeah,
and
the thing
we don't know what the plan is.
Yeah, and Megan, the thing that drives me nuts on this, and if I was putting this forward, now I have no public policy experience. I'm just some dumb suburban white guy that, through the kind auspices of this radio station, allow me to flap my gums here. But I'm saying to myself, okay, this is something like a product that's got to be sold to people. In other words, I have to sell the people on this notion that in 2035 we're not going to sell any more internal combustion engine vehicles. So then again, I would say, well, wait a minute, then shouldn't we, being logical individuals, put a companion plan with this to say, okay, and at the same time, we're going to do this to improve the power grid. We're going to do this to improve the power generation capacity. We're going to do this to improve the affordability of these vehicles. There's none of that. And to me, that's just astounding, I think.
One of the most interesting speakers today was a gentleman from Eversource.
Okay.
And he's predicting that this is going to end up costing billions of dollars just to build out the grid to accommodate this.
Mm-hmm.
For example, right now, at peak demand, and this is just Eversource, this is not UI or any of the other small utilities,
yep.
And their peak demand is 8,000 megawatts.
All right.
Adding all these light and medium-duty vehicles is going to add an additional 4,000 megawatts to the system.
Wow. 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 That's 50%.
No plan. And there's no plan.
Yeah. And again, Megan, okay. And okay. Well, we'll just figure out how to do it. Well, in this, present day, what happens, Megan, if again, rhetorical question, if anybody says, hey, let's build a power generating plant in that city or that town, how many decades will that take before that ever comes to fruition? I mean, it's mind boggling.
I mean, even if the government allows them to do that.
Yeah.
But
and
it's.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Well, they just, it's like, why do we have to jump to these extremes on everything? There's things that we can do now that could actually like cut down on pollution, because that's what the goal is, to cut down on pollution.
Mm-hmm.
Just, we have so many trucks on the road delivering our goods and services. Why can't we use freightliners up and down the East Coast? You know how many trucks I would take off the road? Not that I want to hurt the trucking industry.
No,
I love
get
those
it.
Guys.
I get it.
But We can't, but there's actually, there's a 100-year-old law that won't let us do that. We can only use ships that are built in America and have American crews, which these ships are super, super expensive. There aren't that many, which is why we have to transport all our goods and services via truck on the East Coast instead of allowing, you know, let a company buy a foreign-built ship that's a little bit cheaper, bring that up and down the coast on a boat, less pollution, less wear and tear on the roads. But they don't want to do it because of the special interest groups in the shipping industry.
Yeah, that's a bizarre.
They don't want to allow it.
That's a bizarre
but
law.
You just gave me inspiration. I'm going to write a blog post on that.
There you go. There you go on that weird law, that weird maritime law. You're right. I remember reading about this a couple of years ago where if it's it depends where the ship is built and where it's from, whether or not it can dock. So, Megan, what do you think happens here? I mean, I guess the bottom line is, does anybody care what people said today? Or is Deep in the governor's office just going to go full speed with this? Or, you know, my God, might they actually sit back and say, maybe we need to be a little more well-rounded and specific with this? What do you think?
Unelected bureaucrats probably don't care so much, but elected officials do care.
Mm-hmm.
And I was part of No Toll CT back in the day,
okay.
And we fought the man and we won. So, I mean, we just need to put the public pressure on our elected officials. The process right now is, so it got the hearing. It's the Deep is going to respond to all the questions and concerns. Then they're going to send it over to the attorney general's office.
Yeah. Who's
going to sign off on it or not. And then it goes to this regulatory committee, which is very interesting. It's the only committee like this. It's half Democrat, half Republican. And then they have to pass the regulation.
Hmm.
So when this comes to a vote by this committee, if it's like a tie, it's going to get sent to the legislature, and then they'll debate it. And then hopefully they'll put in a bill that just cuts us off from this whole being governed by California nonsense. But it's going to be on us, the people, to really contact our lawmakers and tell them this, we don't want this. We don't want to be governed by California.
And look, Megan, I always say, if stuff like this is going to happen, I want there to be vigorous debate, yes, with lawmakers that are going to have to vote yes or no, yay or nay on this. I like you, am disheartened when stuff like this either passes by or is proposed to be put in law by unelected bureaucrats. That thing really bothers me.
Well, I say just keep following Yankee Institute. We'll give you all the details on who to contact. And we are also going to be watching them next session. The Deep Commissioner, Katie Dykes, has already said publicly she wants more power. She wants to have mm-hmm. more regulatory authority to be able to do things and other kinds of nonsense.
Yeah,
and she says
that, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, but she says, well, because it's tough to get this stuff done without more authority. Well, stuff like this, Commissioner, with all due respect, is supposed to be tough. You're not turning on a dime here. This is turning a battleship, right?
Absolutely. That's the way the system is set up. It's supposed to be bureaucratic.
Right.
She's a bureaucrat.
That's right. Megan Portfolio was not no bureaucrat her, at least for the time being. She writes the Hartford Portfolio blog at the Yankee Institute. Check it out, yankeeinstitute.org. Megan, we'll check in with you next week. Thank you so much.
Have a good week.
You too. Bye-bye. There you go. All right. So again, folks, you know, a lot of you may think we're overreacting here. We're not. So thanks to Megan today and thanks to Eric Berthel. You just need to know this is happening. That's all. It's what we try to do here in talk radio and, you know, especially in a state like Connecticut that's deep blue, you know, that tries to push through stuff, holding public hearings on a Tuesday afternoon in August. So, gee, I wonder why that was done. The ongoing Russian invasion of Ukraine continues. This is an all-out war. There's been some interesting developments over the past couple of weeks, so I wanted to get back into this just to let you folks know that even though it's kind of the story itself is kind of a B and C and D level story with all the politics we have locally and nationally, it still is a grave situation. Welcoming back this gentleman who's helped us try and understand it, Dr. Bradley Woodworth from the University of New Haven. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Human Sciences and History. He's an authority on Russia, Eastern Europe, and that whole area. Brad, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. Good to have you back. How are you?
I'm fine, Paul. Thank you for having me back.
Well, I thought it was important to have you on, Brad, because we've had so many changes here, including, did I read now that some of the Ukrainian forces are going to get access to F-16 fighter jets? And I know that was a big story over the past few days. Give me your wide view of this, Brad, and where you think we are in this whole thing.
Yeah, so that, I think the wide view must take into account that these planes will not be flying the skies over Ukraine and engaging as squadrons against Russian squadrons or to shoot down missiles, that is, to protect the airspace of Ukraine for probably a year. The U.S. just gave permission for these fighters to be trained on these jets.
Mm-hmm.
These are not, you just don't move from a MiG and then into one of these new American planes. So the pilots will need extensive training. It's of course great news. Of course, Denmark will give up 19 of its fighters. Netherlands is in the process of upgrading to yet newer fighters, and so it will have many of its over 40 fighters that it could donate. But it's not going to be this summer, and so the big picture that this forces us to bear in mind is Europe is getting ready, and the American administration is getting ready for this war to continue at least another year.
Wow. Hmm. So that continues at least another year, Brad. So what happens, do you think, after that, once these Ukrainian pilots are suitably trained and cleared and certified on these jets? Then what happens? Are they doing incursions into Russian airspace? I mean, to me, I read this and I said, wow, what will this bring?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to tell. The Ukrainians, Paul, they're simply fighting for their homeland. I mean, this is something that I think it's difficult for us to remember. When we hear Russia-Ukraine war and, just another war somewhere else in the world, these are people who are fighting to keep their homelands. I mean, there is another country that is bombing them daily. There are daily rockets killing people in eastern and southern Ukraine. To plan for, more than, what are we going to do? What more do you do than defend yourself?
Yeah.
How that will impact the possibility of going beyond Ukraine's borders? I think right now Ukraine has its hands full with trying to push the Russians out. That's really all that the Ukraine government and military wants is to push out the Russians.
Dr. Bradley Woodworth is the guest, University of New Haven. Brad, what do you make of these reports that we constantly hear about the Russian troops being, the fighting forces aren't what we thought they were, old armaments, broken down forces? Any credibility to this? Is this what people thought?
Absolutely.
Should this be surprising?
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. Russia has not been a country that's been able to maintain a military like those in Western Europe or the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing that the Russians have, or I should say, here I really hesitate, because I really don't see all Russians supporting this war. This war is being waged by one man in the Kremlin and those people around him.
Yeah.
Well, of course, those that take orders and agree to take orders. What Putin has that the Ukrainians don't is more is 100 million people more. So the Russian population is about 144 million. Ukraine is 44 million. So that's five times smaller. So Russia has many, many more people to draw on. And another really important thing to bear in mind is that Putin and the people around him don't care about human lives. They don't really care how many young Russians and people of other ethnicities. Russia is a multi-ethnic state. In fact, when we scholars that are following where burials are being and services are being held for fallen servicemen know that a large percentage, we don't know exactly, but a large percentage of the Russian troops who are being killed are from poor and non-Russian areas. They're not from Moscow and from Petersburg, and from the capital city. So Putin has a much larger population, a larger economy to draw upon. And he is not under the pressure of any political forces within the country to seek a ceasefire and to end the war.
Brad, what would happen tomorrow if, for natural reasons or other reasons that many people would speculate, if Vladimir Putin died tonight or tomorrow, what would happen?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Those people around him certainly that have been fighting the war, and the security services in particular would try to maintain his policy. Since this war resulted in the from the decision of one person, it's difficult to know at a deep level how dedicated each individual in the Kremlin around Putin is towards that end. In other words, what we would very likely see is rapidly a struggle among those top some dozen or two dozen people for power, because since this has been a war within which many in the Russian leadership have been declared war criminals, all of their lives are at stake, and they know that.
So, Brad, how deep, if you will, how many layers away from Putin? And I apologize if this is a tough question, but I think people are wondering, how far do you have to get down layer-wise from Putin to maybe get another people or people in that area or in the leadership of the Kremlin saying, hey, this is ridiculous. What are we doing here? There's no, other than grabbing land, there's no ends here. Do you think there might be any sort of active thought in the Kremlin on that, Brad? Or if there is, they've got to keep quiet because they'll end up falling out a window somewhere.
Yeah, I think, we've already seen people falling out of windows. And we continue to see it in the last month. So it's clear that there are people who are in top level of leadership, as well as the military, who are against the war.
Yeah.
But they can't speak out. First off, the best thing that could possibly happen is that they would be removed. But since each, particularly those that are in a position of great public visibility, they very well likely could fall out of windows. The smartest Russian top elites who have been against the war from the beginning simply left the country at the beginning.
So these are the quote unquote the oligarchs, the elites, the tycoons with money. They got out, you're saying?
Well, some of the elites were out already. Some still are in. But the tycoons, the oligarchs, are in a difficult position because they, in many ways, are dependent on their wealth from the Russian state. So those outside of the country are being quiet. But anyone whose property and whose wealth is based on property and wealth within Russia are beholden to Putin at a fundamental level.
Wow. Tough situation all around. Brad, thank you once again, Dr. Bradley Woodworth. We've had him on numerous times, associate professor, Department of Human Sciences and History at the University of New Haven. As you can hear, he specializes in Russian issues in that part of the world as well. Brad, good to speak with you. Take care. We'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. It's good to talk to you.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Dr. Bradley Woodworth, University of New Haven. Tough situation. Interesting, though, that he said we're probably looking at a year before the Ukrainian pilots are good enough to take the seat in a battle situation in those F-16s.